to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial. Next up, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for listening. This is WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, Atlanta's community-based radio station. We are on your dial, but we are also at WRFG.org, streaming around the globe. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer root community. And I am your host, Greg Bossen. I'm queer, and thank you so much for listening. Before I go any further, I wish it would stop being cold, by the way. It is Tuesday night, January the 11th, and it's 2022. I wasn't here. Yes, I was here last week. I can't even remember where I was. I really don't want to start working again, but apparently we're going to have to. Anyway, the opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. Tonight's show is one that came to me over the last couple of weeks. I actually got the idea last week because I don't know if you've noticed, but I've certainly noticed a lot of relationship problems as of late. People that are having challenges in their relationships, couples that are getting divorced, both straight and gay, more so than I'm used to seeing. And I don't know, it may be because I'm my age. I'm 56 right now, so maybe I'm seeing my peers that have had enough with their marriages and are getting divorced, but even younger people, I think it's happening too. I think some of it has to do with COVID. You know, you're stuck with this person for an extended period of time, and it's kind of like, you know, people are rethinking their whole lives because of COVID. Not only the great quitting or the great resignation that's happening with people quitting their jobs, but I think people are quitting their marriages too. But anyway, so I thought we needed to talk about marriages. And divorce, actually. And so we have an attorney who specializes in LGBTQ divorce here in Atlanta. And we are going to have him on the show tonight. And we're going to find out about all things divorce related, things that you need to know about. But before we get to that.
News of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what?
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and say something about COVID. Sorry. Our 7-day average number of cases in the state of Georgia is 18,092 cases a day. Impressive. Our 7-day average in November was 1,100. And so we have more cases than we've ever had. Of course, everybody in the country has more cases than they ever had. Everybody's getting COVID now. Omicron is huge. And I understand that a lot of you think, well, you know, it's not that big of a deal anymore because Omicron isn't as serious as the other versions of COVID were, the other variants. And it's true. However, please understand that because so many more people are getting it, even though a smaller percentage of those people have to go to the hospital, because so many people are getting it, it's still filling up the hospitals. And so it would behoove us as a community, again, I would say it would behoove us, if you are not vaccinated, that you would talk to whoever it is that you need to talk to, perhaps your doctor, to consider possibly getting vaccinated. You know, I know a lot of people didn't want to get vaccinated initially because they wanted to give it some time. Well, it's been a year. And so is that enough time for you? Because we are really stretching our hospitals to the max. So at least talk to your doctor and just consider it, please. I think there's still 26% of the population in this country that can get a vaccine has not been vaccinated yet. So please consider doing that. And please wear a mask when you're out inside venues, please do that. I would appreciate it. You know, it's funny, when I'm here in Atlanta, I see it, a lot of people wearing masks, but boy, I tell you what, take a ride up 75, if you will. Go to Alpharetta or Kennesaw, and they ain't wearing no mask out there, going to get on down. Anyway, enough of that. All right, so, all right, other things that are in the news. In Atlanta, Atlanta City Council member Matt Westmoreland comes out as LGBTQ. Well, comes out as gay. When swearing in of a new administration happens in the city of Atlanta, and it happens on, well, let's see, when does this, did this happen? Yes, this happened on Monday. An unexpected fourth member of the newly elected city council, this happened a week ago Monday, city council took the oath, post to an at-large member, Matt Westmoreland, raised his right hand, and is now openly gay. This is, he gave this announcement on social media last Sunday night, so a week ago Sunday. Tomorrow afternoon, I'll swear an oath for a third time to serve the city of Atlanta and all of her residents, and I'll do so as a proud member of the LGBTQ plus community. So that's very exciting. He says, I wrestled with this decision in terms of whether or not to post it. The fact is that the content is so personal. The desire to live in a world where such pronouncements aren't necessary. The fear that who I choose to be with would change how people view me or my public service. But the former teacher and school board member in me has been thinking about our students who have been struggling to accept themselves for who they are. And frankly, it has inspired me, he has found inspiration in the students who allow their authentic selves to shine brightly for everyone to see. In the end, I just wanted to be my true self. So I think that's really cool. Good for him. And that's it for local news, to be honest with you. The rest of the stuff that I wanted to talk about has to do with stars, movie stars and the like. Clay Aiken, I guess he's not a movie star, but anyway, musical star. I don't know if he's a star anymore or not. Anyway, he has announced that he is running for Congress. American Idol alum Clay Aiken has announced he's running for Congress in North Carolina, and the fans of fellow American Idol alum Ruben Studdard are upset. Aiken made his big announcement in a video posted on his Twitter page earlier yesterday. This was the, I won't play you the video, but this is what he says. Can you believe it's been almost 20 years since I first got to share my voice with you? That's a long time. A lot has changed. We need powerful voices more than ever. So I am running for Congress, and my voice is even stronger now. In the video, Aiken takes aim at Madison Cawthorn, who he labels a white nationalist, and Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who he refers to as a hateful homophobe. Let's see. It's only been a few hours, but there is apparently a shakeup because many people have been mistakenly calling Clay Aiken the American Idol winner when he actually finished second place on the second season of the show back in 2003, and the winner was actually Ruben Studdard. So all of the responses to his running, people have been talking about he's the winner of American Idol, and he did not win American Idol, so Ruben Studdard's fans are upset about that. But whatever. Point is, he's running for Congress in North Carolina. I don't know if he's going to win or not. And I don't know what you think about Clay Aiken. Let me just tell you, let's see if I have time. I will tell you, Clay Aiken. I did go to a concert of his years ago with my best friend, Jenny, whose mother was in love with Clay Aiken. And her mother had passed, and they had already bought the tickets. And so I went with her. And she was adamant that Clay Aiken was not gay. Anyway, we go to this play or show, it was musical, but the story was a story about a kid who was helping the next door, who's going over to the next door neighbor who was an old woman and keeping her company during the holidays or something like that. But Clay Aiken's part was he played the fairy angel. And what would happen is periodically throughout this musical play or whatever, he would appear above the actors and he would sprinkle fairy dust on them and they would stop moving and then he would sing his song. So by the end of the show, I think she had decided that yes, indeed, maybe Clay Aiken was gay. But anyway, enough of that. All right. So MJ Rodriguez, this is the Pose star, was among the winners at last night's Subdued and Low-Key Golden Globe ceremony. Rodriguez, 31, won the award for Best Actress in a Drama Series. And in doing so, she became the first trans actress to win a Golden Globe. Pretty impressive there. I think that's pretty cool. Here's a quote from her. This is the door that is going to open. This is the door that's going to open the door for many more young, talented individuals. They will see that it is more than possible. They will see that a young Black Latina girl from Newark, New Jersey, who had a dream to change the minds of others with love, would be able to. So I think that's very cool. I think that's very exciting. Good for her. And I've seen a couple of Pose. Pose is good. I haven't seen a lot of it, but anyway, enough of that. All right. And we'll end with this. After a record year for anti-trans legislation in 2021, state lawmakers in at least 7 states have introduced bills last week that seek to limit the rights of trans and non-binary people. This during the first week of the new year. Advocates are particularly worried about a South Dakota proposal that relies on private citizens to sue those who break the laws, similar to Texas's controversial abortion ban. NBC News reports that in those 7 states, and here are the 7 states, Arizona, Alabama, Indiana, Kentucky, Oklahoma, New Hampshire, I'm surprised. In South Dakota, Republican lawmakers have introduced at least 9 anti-trans measures. Most of the proposals seek to either bar trans kids from playing school sports or limiting their access to gender-affirming care. So how sad is that? Ridiculous. But having said that, we will be right back to talk all about divorce.
Love ain't just black and white. Ain't that simple? It's hard to tell who's wrong or right. When it's dark with us, I swear I've been listening.
Donate your car, truck, or boat. It's easy. We put it to good use and you get a tax receipt. Simply call our toll-free number. We pick up your vehicle, running or not, and send you a tax receipt. It only takes a few minutes. Call toll-free at 844-WRFG-CAR or 844-973-4227 to arrange a free pickup. All proceeds benefit your favorite community radio station, 89.3 FM, WRFG.org. Thank you.
Problem is all inside your head, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover.
All right, and hopefully you know that that was Paul Simon 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. I thought that was entirely appropriate. You were listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial, streaming at WRFG.org. And tonight we have a sad but interesting topic that I've not discussed before on Alternative Perspectives. So again, this show is devoted to issues affecting the LGBTQ community, and divorce is among them. And we've not had a show on divorce. And I'll tell you, in the United States, I'm sure you've heard this before, about 50% of married couples end in divorce. And this is actually the sixth highest divorce rate in the world. And then those who divorce then marry again, the percentages go down, or they go up even higher. Subsequent marriages even have a higher divorce rate of 60% for second marriages, and 73% of third marriages end in divorce. So I was amazed at over half. But actually, if you look at the data, divorce rates have been going down over the last 50 years, except for now because of COVID. So divorce has actually risen. Divorce inquiries at law firms around the country have risen over 122% when you compare July to October in 2020 versus that same period in 2019. Why is this happening? I assume that it's because couples are being forced, or at least they were forced in 2020, to kind of stay home with each other. And, you know, when you're out and about, you can kind of ignore things that are problematic in a marriage. But because of COVID, it's one of the things that people have been, I think, one of the effects is, you know, it'll make or break a marriage. And so while we could certainly talk at length about why this is happening, and by the way, I don't know if you notice this, but I'm noticing it. It's happening all over the city. I just know a lot of couples, either divorced or just simply in relationships, that are having challenges right now and looking at possibly splitting in one way or the other. So I thought, you know, let's do something about divorce and kind of a nuts and bolts how it works. And so we've got a guest on tonight's show, John DiNatel, who is the lead family law attorney at Kitchens New Cleghorn law firm here in Atlanta that's been around for years. And first of all, thank you, John, for joining us. I appreciate you coming onto the show.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yes. So and I guess I did want to start. I mean, have you seen an increase in inquiries about divorce over the last year or so?
You know, it tailed off there for a minute when the pandemic first broke in. But as folks, I guess, sort of spent more and more time together at home, either if they had kids, the kids were home as well. There was no travel, couldn't go to the office, you know. We have seen more interest across the spectrum in folks sort of calling to understand their rights, get an idea of what the process is. I think that it probably you can fairly chalk it up to, you know, people spending a lot of time with each other, having no outlet. That, you know, does take its toll on a marriage.
Yeah, it certainly can. So, and just so that people understand, now Kitchens New Cleghorn has a history in Atlanta. How long has the practice been in business? Do you know? I know.
It's fine. In its current iteration, it was founded in 2004 by Randy New and Joyce Kitchens. Jeff Cleghorn then joined, 5 or 6 years later, and developed the family law practice at the firm. But it's been a gay-owned firm for a very long time and been active in the community, you know, during its time here.
Yeah, I remember that's kind of what made me think of Kitchens New Cleghorn, because I remember them kind of being out in front in Atlanta for issues affecting the LGBTQ community, divorce and marriage being one of them. I remember them doing sessions on that years ago, right after we got marriage equality, and I guess that was 2015, if I'm not mistaken. So I wanted to get into the details here so people, you know, can understand. And I guess the first thing that I was surprised to, and I guess it makes sense, is if a couple is married, well, first of all, in this state, in Georgia, are we a community property state or are we not?
We're an equitable division state. So
what does that mean?
Basically, it means that, the code says that the marital estate begins when the marriage begins, right? Date of marriage onward. That's the start of the marital estate. And then anything that, is earned, accrued, et cetera, asset-wise or debt-wise afterwards, is, as part of the marital estate, is therefore subject to equitable division. And will be divided amongst the parties, depending, on the evidence, on circumstances, et cetera, generally speaking, 50-50. But no, we are not a community property state like California or something like that.
And just to make sure, what does that mean? What would be happening if it was a community property state?
excuse me. That's a good question for an attorney in a community property state. I don't practice in one, and so I could give you a vague answer.
I guess you could go back further, but I guess in the state of Georgia, if you're a gay couple and you've been together for 20, 30 years, and then you get married in 2015 or 16. And then a few years later, you get divorce. What does that mean for the marital assets? How does that work then?
I'm sorry. Can you say that again, Greg?
Sure. So what I was just trying to get at, I think, is that there's a difference with how the assets are treated before the legal marriage versus after the legal marriage. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, because I think you said that's what a lot of people are a little confused about, right?
Right. Especially for, our same-sex clients, oftentimes they will have been in a long-term committed relationship. And especially before Obergefell and marriage equality, I've had clients, who've been together for 25, 30 years, but have only been able to be legally married, since 2015, in this state, at least. For whatever reason, they end up, a party or both of them decide to split. And then I get a call and the question comes up, okay, well, we've spent all this time together. We've got a house together, perhaps a vacation home. Both of us have 401ks. We've been saving together, et cetera. How are we going to divide these assets that we've been working together towards? In Georgia, at least, that marital estate only begins at the date of marriage, right? And because marriage wasn't permitted in Georgia until Obergefell in 2015, that 15, 20, whatever amount of time prior to 2015, when marriage was made legal in the state, that doesn't count towards your marital estate. So if you and your partner accrued significant assets leading up to your marriage after Obergefell, those assets are the separate property of the partner or the party who earned them, either via employment income, appreciation on an asset that was owned prior to the marriage, et cetera. All that is considered separate property for the sake of division of property in a divorce. So only the assets or income earned after the date of marriage until the separation in Georgia would be considered the marital estate, and therefore the only thing subject to equitable division.
Is that true if I married in another state years before 2015, like I married in Massachusetts and then moved down here to Georgia and got divorced here?
For the most part, it is true.
Wow.
It's a close question, and, that can, if you say you have a civil union or something in Vermont or in Massachusetts, say, and that was a legal status recognized by that state. It would not have at the time, however, been recognized here in Georgia, right? It is relevant for the purposes of division of assets in the sense that it evinces an intent between the parties to that these assets should have been shared or should have been part of what would, you know, in the future become a marital estate. So it can be used as evidence in an equitable sense, in the sense of, well, here's what the intent of the parties were when they bought this house. You know, they'd been in a civil union for 8 years when they moved to Georgia, bought the house, and it's appreciated. And then they were able to get married legally. And now, they're getting a divorce for whatever reason, but their intent was to make this a property, an asset that they shared together. You know, it's up to the judge at that point, to weigh that evidence, along with everything else that's presented, and how to divide like that type of asset. But if you're talking just strictly speaking, it would be date of marriage onward, for the state of Georgia.
Okay. And even though I think marriage was considered not legal federally, but it was legal in Massachusetts, it wasn't legal in Georgia. So I guess if you're in Georgia when you get the divorce, then technically the judge can ignore anything that happened before. Because if you're already married and then the date of the decision in, I think it was June or July or whatever of 2015, that's when the judge would look. It would say, well, it became legal on the state in Georgia, so I'll look from here forward. Technically, I guess that's what you're saying.
That's my experience. Yeah. Dealing with this. And, I deal with this quite often. And the reason for that is because, a Georgia court prior to then would not have considered or would not have accepted the marriage in Massachusetts as a valid marriage in Georgia at the time, right? And so it's when did the marriage become valid in Georgia? And that was at the time Obergefell was handed down.
Wow.
And so that's when Georgia would say, okay, well, we'll recognize the marriage in that state or that other state.
Do you have to get divorced in the state that you live in, or could a couple go back to Massachusetts to get a divorce to get a more equitable settlement for one party?
You've got to, well, essentially, it just depends on jurisdiction. If you've been living in Georgia for 6 months, then a Georgia court's going to have jurisdiction over your marriage, because marriage is a status conferred upon individuals by the state, right? And okay. So if you wanted to, one of you could move back to, say, Massachusetts in this example, and establish residency there. And then the individual who remains in Georgia would sue the person for divorce in Massachusetts. And then the Massachusetts court would have jurisdiction. And in that case, then, the marriage in Massachusetts that happened in, say, 2011, then it would be treated differently than the way it would be treated here in Georgia if you were to pursue it in Georgia.
A lot of hoops to go through, but just trying to understand. And it's, that's unrealistic. So most people, that live here are going to get divorced here. So I guess what I'm wondering then is, given that situation that there's going to be a division of assets, and I guess I want to ask one more question about the division of assets. Like, any income that occurs after the date of marriage, even though one party might be making all the money and one party might be purchasing all the assets, theoretically, half of all of that is due to the other party. Correct? Is that what you're telling me?
That's right. And, the rationale behind that, or at least, the way the legislature sees it, is that marriage is an enterprise undertaken by two people, and that both parties contribute to the marriage in their own way. And it may be that one party, earns all the money. They're the person who buys the home, who, has, a giant retirement account, et cetera. The other party, doesn't do much, or they, stay at home, make dinner, whatever. It honestly doesn't matter. That marriage is an enterprise undertaken by two individuals. and each individual works together for the marriage, right? And it doesn't matter that, you know, one person may contribute to the marriage with money. The other person may contribute to it with handling social, the social aspect of the marriage, or the emotional aspect of the marriage, or may stay home to take care of children if the individuals have children.
So that's why
the assets are divided, on an equitable basis like that.
So if you're just joining us, by the way, we are speaking about divorce, both as it relates to gay as well as straight couples. But obviously, we're focused on the LGBTQ population. And we're speaking with John DiNatale with Kitchens New Cleghorn. He's the lead family law attorney. And so I guess as a practical matter, what happens in court in these cases? Because I know typically with a lot of gay unions, and maybe with straight as well, there's usually one person who makes the mass amount of money. And if there's not any children, then, you know, the other person, it's not as if the other person, you know, I mean, keeping up the household and everything, I'm not trying to minimize that. I'm just saying that as a practical matter, do they end up splitting things 50-50? Judges?
For the most part, yes. It can depend on the circumstances and the conduct of the parties. If the conduct is truly heinous, a judge may consider that when weighing how to divide an estate, mm-hmm. a marital estate. But, you know, absent that kind of, evidence or fact pattern, a judge is generally going to divide the marital estate in half.
Okay. All right. So if there was a house, you know, most people have a house. If the house was purchased before the marriage, then that would not be split. But if the house was purchased after the marriage, it would?
Again, you know, I'm an attorney, so most of my sentences begin with "it depends."
Right, right.
So if the house was purchased after the marriage, then, you know, unless the house was purchased with separate property, and then, you know, you have an issue with, well, the person who put the down payment with their separate property, do they get that back? Or was that transmuted into a marital asset, right, itself? If an asset was purchased before the marriage, so in this example, a house, say myself and another individual decide to get married, but I've purchased a home. We get married, right? And we remain married for 6, 7, 8 years. The home appreciates, $100,000 over that period of time. We decide to get divorced. During the divorce, we need to split up our assets, that house being one of them. You know, and I would say, well, I bought the house is mine, so, you know, we're not going to divide it. At the same time, though, the house did appreciate in value during the period of marriage, right? So it may be the case that, you know, the down payment that I put on the house and all the mortgage payments that I paid up until the date of marriage, I can recoup, right, as my separate property. But the mortgage payments made after the marriage, if I'm paying from employment income earned after the marriage or other income that would be considered marital, that is marital property. And the appreciation on the home, if we've made improvements, say we added a pool, right? And just sort of passive appreciation on the home. That all is marital property as well if it happens from after the date of marriage. And so that would then be valued and split equitably, meaning for the most part 50-50, depending on the circumstances.
Okay. All right. One more little thing, and then we're going to take a break. So given all of this, I know that you had mentioned to me that, you know, there's people that come to you and they say, you know, they want to get a divorce. And you were like, well, I wish you had done this or I wished you had done that. So and I want to get into custody of kids. But before we do that, is there something in particular that you think a couple should do before getting married, you know, in terms of discussing how this might work, short of a prenuptial? Or maybe recommend that.
Well, that's where I was going with it. I think the conversation of a prenup agreement needs to be had, only because it clarifies for individuals what exactly a marriage entails under the law. Because, you know, everybody goes and gets married, hopefully, believing that, you know, this person is the person for me. We're going to be together till we grow old and you know, we ache all over. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be, you know, a relationship for the storybooks. As you mentioned at the top of the show, half the time that isn't the case. But a lot of folks do go into marriage with that in mind, with stars in their eyes, but failing to consider the practical aspects of, okay, I work my butt off and I earn, a lot of money, both for my own security, but now, you know, I'm going to earn it for another person as well. If 10 years down the road, this doesn't work out and I'm sitting on $500,000, you know, a quarter million of that or half of that is going to go to the other party in the marriage. And is that something that comports with my idea of financial stability in the future? What do I want to have as my own set aside as my separate property, versus what I want to make marital? And, you know, a prenup, whether or not you want to get one or not, that's up to the parties. And you know, in some circumstances they're appropriate, in some circumstances they're not. But what it does is it helps people bring clarity to the commitment that they're making to each other when they decide to get married, because it's not just a commitment of love or a commitment of fidelity. It's a commitment financially as well. And that not only affects your future financial security and state, but also those of, you know, your family, possibly children, et cetera, and maybe a future mate as well. So, you know, I think that conversation at the very least is an appropriate one to have, because people need to talk about money up front, and property up front, so that they can set expectations and understand exactly what not only they want for themselves, but what they want and expect out of a marriage as well.
Yeah, I think it's might be a tough conversation to have at times, but I think it's worth having. And I think there's a lot of people that might be surprised to know that, you know, that, you know, oh, hey, everything you got, yeah, half of it, well, what you got, you know. But all right, well, so with that, we're going to take a break. You are listening to WRFG Alternative Perspectives, and we are talking about divorce. We will be right back.
Turn down the lights, turn down the bed, turn down these voices inside my head. Lay down with me, tell me no lies, just hold me close.
The following is a public affairs bulletin board announcement brought to you by your station for progressive information and hand-picked quality music, WRFG 89.3 FM, WRFG.org. Wednesday, January 12th is the National Day of Action in solidarity with Amazon workers everywhere, organizing for their rights to living wages, safe working conditions, and to have a union. In Atlanta, supporters will gather at the intersection where the Midtown Whole Foods is located, 22 14th Street Northwest, Atlanta 30309, at 12 noon. Flyers with information about the anti-worker, anti-union practices of Amazon and its owner, Jeff Bezos, will be distributed. Recent months have seen the National Labor Relations Board overturn the results of the 2021 election at the Bessemer, Alabama warehouse because of Amazon's flagrant violations of labor law. The NLRB has ordered another election to be held this spring. Amazon workers in Staten Island facilities have filed for a union election, and workers in Chicago and elsewhere have staged public walkouts to publicize their grievances. Now is the time for visible solidarity from working and poor people, Amazon and Whole Foods customers, to support these workers organizing for their rights. For information on the national call, the website is supportamazonworkers.org. This action is being called by the ATL Amazon Workers Solidarity Network.
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. And saw your back from outer space. I just walked in the
All right. Gloria Gaynor with "I Will Survive," which I thought again was another apropos song. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives, and we are talking about divorce, in particular the issues related to LGBTQ divorce. And we are speaking with the lead family law attorney for Kitchens New Cleghorn here in Atlanta. His name is John DiNatale. Want to talk again about more, a little bit about divorce, but what we haven't discussed is custodial rights. So talk a little bit about what happens when there is a custody issue. I know there's a lot of gay couples that have either adopted, or they have decided, through some other means to have kids, in fertilization or something like that, certainly with women, where one woman is a biological parent and the other one isn't, and I suppose the same could be true said of a man. So how does that work? Does that play into custodial issues at all? Who's the biological parent?
Certainly it does. This is probably one of the more complex areas affecting the LGBTQ community that we see on a regular basis. And a lot of it just sort of depends on the posture of the case, right? So is it a same-sex couple who decided to have a child with sperm from a sperm bank or a known donor or something after the marriage? Is it a couple who were together, one of them had a child and then decided to get married? Is it a couple who met after one of the individuals had a child and they've been together, they decided to get married, and then they want to adopt as a stepchild, what are the parental rights of the father or the mother in that case? In Georgia, at least, there's a lot of gray area here, and it really depends on the circumstances of the individual case, how custodial rights are affected. If you want to talk about, as you mentioned, does it matter if the birth parent or does the birth parent have, special rights or additional rights or something like that? The answer to that is yes. Georgia law recognizes as legal parents individuals who are married, and then if they have a child born within wedlock, both parents are automatically, by process of law, considered the legal parents of the child, right? This should be the case for same-sex couples, too. But as far as I know, Georgia Supreme Court hasn't really weighed in on this specific question yet. But it's still a gay area, and why, best practice, or at least the family law community will tell same-sex couples that indeed you did have the child, you were married at the time, and so the statute as written should consider you a legal parent. But to be on the safe side, let's go ahead and do a step-parent adoption or a second-parent adoption to make sure that your legal rights as a parent to this child that the both of you intended to have, that you went to a sperm bank or got a known donor agreement or something else like that, that you intended to have together and intended to be the parents of together. But to submit the fact that you are the legal parent to this child, even if dad had In the case of, say, a lesbian couple, even if dad had, you know, terminated his rights, or you got it from a sperm bank, and so, you know, dad terminated his rights up front and was unknown, whoever the genetic donor was. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is that it sounds blurry, but it sounds like you want to get as many, well, pardon the pun, eggs in your basket as possible. So that would mean that if I'm a lesbian couple, the woman who gives birth to the child, that's not a problem. The other person needs to look at adoption in order to cement her right. So if she adopts, what happens to the man who, can we not have three parents with parental rights in the state of Georgia? Is it always just two?
As far as I know, that's the case. I mean, what'll have to happen for an adoption, if it's, you know, if the birth mother, you know, obtained the genetic material at, say, a sperm bank, you know, the individual who made the donation to the sperm bank has waived any right to any parental right to the child, right? And assigned away that right up front. That's part of the agreement. And so there won't be any notice requirement to a father or something else like that will be moot at that point. And so you can go, if you're married, say, then you would go with a step-parent adoption. If you were unmarried, you could go with a second-parent adoption, which in Georgia doesn't technically recognize second-parent adoptions, though, depending on the county that you're in, some judges, you know, will go with it, or at least that's my experience. But if you do know the donor of the genetic material, so say it is a friend that you and, you know, your husband or your wife know and trust, want them to donate their sperm, and they say, sure, that's fine, I'll do that, or their egg, then, and you would enter into, you know, a known donor agreement. This is an instance in which you'd want to, you know, retain an attorney who specializes in assisted reproductive technologies, because the code around this area is relatively new, and it's also in flux, because the technology is constantly getting updated and new things are being introduced, et cetera. And also our concept of, you know, the egg, the donor, who owns what, when, et cetera, is evolving as well. And there are attorneys all around the state who specialize in this specific kind of thing, about sussing out, you know, how to handle, who will have parental rights, how to terminate parental rights that may be inferred by a court or by the law, et cetera, to make sure that the parties who intended to have the child together are the parties who are the legal parents.
Yeah, so it sounds like the bottom line is, once you decide to have a child, you need to take a look at this. And adoption seems to be something that you need to do. And once you're an adoptive parent, are you given the exact same amount of deference technically with a judge as the birth parent is?
You are. Okay. You are the legal parent. For all intents and purposes, the state recognizes you as the natural parent of that child.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, wow. All right. Okay. I guess,
and Greg,
go ahead.
Greg, mm-hmm. just to sort of put a point on it, in the gay community, this is especially important because, you know, you may find yourself in a situation where, you know, for, you know, you guys had a child together. You didn't end up getting an adoption, but you were married. You had the child together. Everything's going fine. The person who supplied the sperm, you know, lives in Alaska, and they don't have any part of the child's life, et cetera. But, you know, something unforeseen happens and you need to make a medical decision, or, you know, the other party passes and the court isn't automatically going to give you custody of the child because it may not recognize you as the legal guardian of the child, right? So because of the unforeseen events in the future where, you know, you do need the prerogatives that come with being a legal parent, it's essential to, talk with an attorney about these, these options before having a child, or even if you've had a child already, it's still good to go talk to an attorney about, to say, hey, I want to make sure that all my bases are covered, just in case something happens where a court may ask, are you the legal parent of the child? Can you make this decision?
Gotcha. Now, I know that most of your cases are here in Atlanta, in Fulton and DeKalb, if I'm not wrong there. So I would assume that those judges are a little bit more liberal. But if you had an experience down in South Georgia or anything with a judge where, you know, you had a really tough time with a judge kind of honoring, you know, the marriage, or perhaps there was a trans person involved and didn't get treated fairly by a judge. I mean, do you have any stories about that or anything?
Well, yeah. So most of my practice is in the metro area, and for the most part, the Metro Atlanta bar is, or bench is, pretty open-minded, and, you know, marriage equality, gay, straight, lesbian, doesn't matter. The law is in Georgia what the law is, and they'll follow it. The further you get away from Atlanta, you may have a gap in understanding. I have had clients before where, they've had an open relationship. They were married. They had an open sexual relationship, however. This was down in, what was the county? I forget what the county, Walker County maybe. The judge was had a difficult time understanding that is not an uncommon sort of situation in same-sex couples to have. And so, to the judge, they were both committing infidelity all the time, right? And so that brought up questions about alimony, and that brought up questions about, who was at fault, because, infidelity is a grounds for divorce in Georgia. That kind of wrinkle can cause issues, but for the most part, in my experience, judges are going to treat same-sex marriages just like they treat heterosexual marriages. Now, the exception to that would be sort of the burgeoning number of cases that involve trans individuals. It's still relatively early when it comes to testing out the bench in cases where, one member of the marriage has decided to transition. A divorce then, proceeds from that, and they've got kids, say. I had a case recently in Douglas County with this very situation, and I had an attorney threaten me that they were going to hire an expert witness, a therapist, a child psychologist, who would testify in court that this transitioning individual, the transition that this individual was undergoing, would be harmful to the children, and therefore he would not be fit to be the primary custodial parent for these children, even though my client, who was the individual who was transitioning, he had already had this conversation with his children. He had four of them and had given birth to all four of them. And, he talked about it with them, over time at different periods with his husband at the time. The kids understood it and were happy for him, et cetera. But, I got this from the other attorney simply because, sometimes divorces, aren't amicable, and, having custody of children is extremely important. So that kind of issue, unfortunately, however asinine it is, awful it would be to make that type of argument in court, it is out there. And it is something that, if you're going through a divorce, as a trans individual, that needs to be thought about at least and prepared for if the person on the other side of the divorce is willing to, wade down in that muck and do that for whatever reason.
That's awful. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left here, and I did have a thought. I wanted to ask you, because now you said about 40 or 50%, I think you told me, of your divorce cases are with the LGBTQ community. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So you're about half and half. Not that it matters, but you're straight. If it's okay, if I tell them that you're straight.
That's fine. I'm okay. I'm okay with the audience.
No, I just outed you as a straight person. anyway, what have you noticed, or have you noticed, in terms of how divorces run in the straight community as opposed to the gay community? Like, is there any differences in terms of how the clients, how the parties act? Is it all the same?
Well, you're setting me up to get in trouble here, Greg.
I will tell you that in my view, and I may be wrong, but I think that it seems like it's more likely that in gay couples, there's more amicable splits than in straight couples. I mean, completely wrong, though. I have no idea. I just think that.
For the most part, it depends on the individuals, and it depends on what somebody did. Mm-hmm. I will say that in same-sex divorces, more often than not, there aren't any children, and children are the source of a lot of acrimony in a divorce and a lot of tension and conflict. And so without children, it's really a matter of math. And it's, okay, well, how are we dividing this? What is this worth, et cetera? And there's a lot of anger and things like that. But at the end of the day, the parties understand that this is math. This is what the judge is going to do, et cetera. They tend to be a little bit more practical in that regard. You don't have a lot of the hangups that you would normally have in a heterosexual marriage.
Yeah. That's
otherwise, folks are folks, and love is messy, marriage is messy, and it just depending on who it is and how they got there. I don't know if it matters whether or not it's a same-sex marriage or a heterosexual marriage.
Yeah, of course. I'm just looking for something. I'm just looking for it. All right. Well, thank you so much. We've been speaking with John DiNatale with Kitchen's New Cleghorn. And you can go if unfortunately you're interested in this, or I mean, really everybody who's even looking at getting married should at least make themselves aware of some of these issues. And it sounds like certainly if you're looking at having a child,
Greg, for sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I butt in 1 second?
Sure.
Only because at the top of the segment, you said, we're going to talk about something sad. And you just said, unfortunately, if you're looking into this, I do want to say that divorce can be can certainly be a sad thing, but it's often the case that it is just as happy an occasion that is as a sad occasion. A lot of folks, find a new life that they've wanted for a very long time, or, a lot of cases, in my particular practice, I get cases like this quite often. Somebody got married to a woman 25 years ago and has been gay the whole time, has finally come out. And it's a extremely tough situation. And the emotional turmoil is intense, but it is also a cause for celebration because they're finally, being true to themselves, and also, letting themselves be true to their community, to their kids, et cetera. And so that is also a cause for celebration. So, a divorce isn't always a sad event to be, avoided or thought of in those terms. It can also be a happy one.
I really appreciate you. I really appreciate you saying that. And in that case, it would also, to a certain extent, might be a cause for celebration for the spouse to allow them to go out and get somebody that actually is sexually attracted to them. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it. That'll do it with for our show. You've been listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG Next up, we have the Peach State Festival. Take care of yourself.